Before I begin, I want to say the set-aside prayer. God, please set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your truth. Guide me today so I can carry your message. Amen. Okay, on Sunday night we are on More About Alcoholism. For those who haven't been on the site or listen on the podcast, if you go to the site experiencethebigbook.org, I have four thoughts on More About Alcoholism, the Jay Walker, Jim, Fred, the Step 1, thoughts 70 to 74, I looked it up today. If you go to the site, you push menu, and you push episodes, and you go all the way to the bottom, there are tags. And if you push More About Alcoholism, you'll see that I've done these pages several times, and they're all a little different. These pages are very powerful. Today, we are on page 33, and I don't know if we're going to finish Jim tonight or not. We'll see. But these pages are very powerful. It's been a bad week. A lot of people that I know or I've tried to help or were helping have fallen off. And it's just a reminder of how powerful and deadly this disease is. And if after what we read tonight, if you're not grateful that you're sober today, I don't know what else will make you. Because we're going to read about what is our essential problem that we cannot see the truth about alcohol right before we drink it. Ever. The rest of our lives, we will not. There will be a certain time when I will not be able to see the truth on my own if I'm a real alcoholic, and I will drink. Now, there's a difference between the real alcoholic and the alcoholic. Everybody's always wondering, what's the difference? A real alcoholic is an alcoholic who realizes that they're an alcoholic. And that's all that they're talking about in the book. The real alcoholic has two problems. One, they can't control how much they drink once they put in their body. Anybody have that? And they cannot sober have choice of whether they're going to drink or not. And if you have that, you're a real alcoholic. Now, they'd say you could be an alcoholic and not realize it, because that's true. A lot of people are alcoholics long before they come in here and say it. But that's what makes you a real alcoholic. And if you are a real alcoholic, then there's a real problem, because the solution to that has to be on a spiritual basis. It can't come from reading the book and studying the book. You can go to a lot of meetings, you can do service, but you have to have a relationship with a power greater than you that will restore you to sanity. And we're going to see why, because they put this whole chapter in here just to hammer home the point that if you are a real alcoholic, your only defense against drinking is going to come from God. And the whole point of this program is to develop a relationship with God. And it's a relationship that you can rely and depend on and will give you a power to live. Now, you hear all sorts of stuff at meetings, but that's the message. And the 12 steps says having had a spiritual awakening is the result of the steps. If you don't have a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps, you don't have a defense against the first drink. Now, if you don't need to recover on a spiritual basis, then you're not a real alcoholic. But if you're a real alcoholic, sooner or later you're going to have that, because you can go a long time and not drink, but not have a power to live. And so let's see what they say. We got to page 33 2 weeks ago. Last week we had so many powerful birthdays that we didn't really do a meeting. We just celebrated. We had people have been here for quite a few years, all celebrating birthdays. It was very special to me. It says, young people may be encouraged with the second paragraph. We'll start at the top. They're doing the man of 30, page 33. We read about the man of 30. He was 30 years old. He decided he was never going to drink again until he made enough money and retired. Then he drank again and he died. And it says, this case contains a powerful lesson. Most of us have believed that if we remained sober for a long stretch, we could thereafter drink normally. Now, I think that's true of a lot of people and a lot of people in this room, because there are a lot of people who were sober quite a while who drank. Did it work? No, didn't work for me. It didn't work, but we must have thought we could drink normally. And here's a man who at 55 years found he was just where he left off at 30. We have seen the truth demonstrated again and again. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Now, that is the truth, but there are alcoholics who forget that. And there are people come in here and they get sober, life gets better, they're here 90 days, 6 months, things are looking good, they're back at home, they're working, and they must, their minds say, you know, I've been sober 6 months. I can do this anytime. You know, and then they say, well, I don't need to go to the meetings anymore, and I don't need a sponsor, and then the next thing you know, they're drunk. The ego rebuilds quickly. This is a very, very, very tough disease. It's a fatal disease. It says, commencing to drink after a period of sobriety, we're in a short time as bad as ever. If we're planning to stop drinking, anybody want to stop drinking? Everybody here want to stop drinking?
Yes. Yeah.
Good, good idea. We must have no reservation of any kind. Now think about this. Nor any lurking notion that someday we will be immune to alcohol. Now, I've been reading this book and he talks about the four stages of surrender. And he talks about conscious surrender and unconscious surrender. And I think what they're talking about here is that you have to have complete understanding that you're never going to be immune to alcohol. Now, how do you get that? From your first step. See, these first 45 pages are all about the first step. Because if you don't understand and experience your first step and understand you're powerless over alcohol, then there's really no hope for you. You won't do the deal. Young people may be encouraged by this man's experience to think they could stop. Now, a young person when they wrote the book was 35. Clarence Snyder, who founded AA in Cleveland, was sent when he was 37 to Akron by his wife to see Dr. Bob in 1937, and I think he was 35 years old. And Dr. Bob thought he was too young. He thought he was too young to get it. Called him a kid. We doubt if many of them can do it because none of them will really want to stop. Hardly one of them, because of the peculiar mental twist already acquired, will find he can win out. Now, this peculiar mental twist, once it's acquired, you can never lose it. It means there's a part of your brain that is damaged. You have brain damage. There's a part of your brain that's damaged. And when you don't feel good and you feel irritable, restless, and discontent, this damaged part of your brain will say, Michael, get a drink. Where'd that come from? And once that damaged part of my brain tells me I need a drink, I have no defense against it. And that's powerless. It's called the peculiar mental twist, and they're going to describe it in the rest of this chapter. Several of our crowd men of 30 or less have been drinking only a few years, but they found themselves as helpless as those who've been drinking 20 years. What makes you helpless alcoholic? You've lost the power of choice to drink. If your problem is you can't control how much you drink when you drink, don't drink. Right? Now, if you can do that, you're not a real alcoholic. Now, they talk about hard drinkers, remember? And if they're given a sufficient reason to quit, they can on a non-spiritual basis. But if you're a real alcoholic, what they're saying is you have to have a spiritual basis of life or else. Remember that? And I think that's on pages at the beginning of We Agnostics. To be gravely affected is not good. Okay? To be gravely affected means that you have a fatal illness. You don't have to drink for a long time. Doesn't matter how long you drank or how much you drank. And they didn't really realize that women could be alcoholics till they had written the book and they had their first woman member. Because remember in 1937, it was a different society. And we were in the Depression, coming out of the Depression. People didn't have phones. They didn't have cars. It was a whole different world. And they didn't realize that women could drink, but we think that's true. There are some in the room, aren't there? Potential female alcoholics often turn into a real thing or gone beyond recall in a few years. And I don't really know. I've heard it that sometimes the effect of alcohol on women and the liver comes on quicker than in men. But I'm not sure. I've heard that. Certain drinkers who would be greatly insulted if called alcoholics are astonished at their inability to stop. So they don't want to be called an alcoholic, but they're unable to stop. So I wrote, helpless has nothing to do with time or amount, is when we lose power of choice and control. Now, I do have a choice today, and I make this point all the time. I heard a long time ago, somebody said, the only choice I make today is to seek the power that gives me the choice. And that's what AA is all about, seeking God. God can and will if he were sought. Have you ever heard that read? So we need to be God's seekers all the time. And if you seek God with the intensity of a drowning man, you're going to make it. And if you seek God, God will put the people in your life so that you'll be able to get the message and recover. And people could talk about that. We are familiar with the symptoms, sees large number of potential alcoholics among young people everywhere. But try and get them to see it. Remember, that's the problem why people die. There are those who cannot and will not do this simple program. Those who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. Has anybody ever heard that before? Well, what does that mean? It means you can't see it. You can't see the hopelessness and futility of your situation. You can't see the truth. And you can't be honest because you think there's still a third way out. There's still another option. You're still going to be able to drink. You're going to be able to know when the certain time comes. And I think it's a gift when you can see the hopelessness and futility of your situation. I think that's what hitting bottom is. It's not outside circumstances. It's that moment of truth when you see the hopelessness and futility of your situation. You really see it, and you cannot deny it. And it's a gift from God. And then I know I ask God for help, and things happened in my life. And bottom is not outside circumstances. People come here because outside circumstances are bad. But they can keep getting worse, don't worry. But it's when you completely give up in here because you see you cannot lick this thing, and you're completely defeated, you get freedom. See, surrender isn't bad. Surrender is the beginning of hope. Because you give up on yourself. You give up on any way of fixing this, and you ask for help. And a lot of people ask God for help, and then those people can talk about that today. But then there is a warning. God won't do for you what you cannot do for yourself. You're going to have to work the steps. You're going to have to take the action. You're going to have to become a God seeker. And with the desperation of a drowning man, we reach up, remember, and we have the flimsy reed. Page 28, and we reach out with the desperation of doubting man for the flimsy reed, and it becomes the powerful hand of God. All we ask you in here is to reach up and grab that flimsy reed, and it'll become the hand of God. As we look back, we feel that we had gone on drinking many years beyond the point where we could quit on our own willpower. If anyone questions whether he has entered this is a dangerous area, right? Because if you have this, then you're gravely affected. If you have this, you're a real alcoholic. It says, let him try leaving liquor alone for 1 year. They used to have this Marty Mann test. She was the first woman in AA. She became head of the National Council of Alcohol Lism. She was a very, very wonderful woman, helped so many people. She had this two drinks a day test for 30 days. See if you could just drink two drinks a day for 30 days. Try it. If he is a real alcoholic and very far advanced, there is scant chance of success. It's not going to happen. In the early days of our drinking, we occasionally remained sober for a year or more. And you hear that. People can stay sober for a while. And usually when they come back, they always tell you how long they were sober before. I don't know why. I guess it's a, you know, they don't want people to know they're okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But then you have to ask them, well, what are you going to do different this time? What's different this time? Becoming serious drinkers again later. Though you may be able to stop for a considerable period, you may yet be a potential alcoholic. We think few to whom this book will appeal can stay dry anything like a year. Now, that's another thing about this book. This book was written in 1937 and 8, published early in 1939. There were like 60 to 70 people sober at that time. This book was written for people who were down and out. This wasn't for people who decide they're going to go to AA, things are bad at home. This was for people who were hopelessly defeated, and it was a way out. Because remember, in the foreword, the first edition said, we are 100 men and women who have a hopeless condition of mind and body. We have recovered from this. And we wrote this book to show you precise instructions on how we did it. And so when they wrote this book, what they're doing in the first 44 pages is trying to get you to identify with them. Because if you have what they had, you have a hopeless condition of mind and body. And they thought that if they wrote this book, the people who had this would jump on this. And they'd want to do this. And they'd get better. And then they'd carry the message. They've envisioned this book as a 12th step to the world. And so when you read it, you have to see to whom they're writing it. And I think that this book really appeals the most to people who are desperate. And people who aren't really desperate, I don't know that they really get into the book. Because it may not appeal to them. Some will be drunk the day after making their resolutions. Anybody ever heard of that? Some on the same day. Most of them within a few weeks. Now, a resolution is a firm decision to do or not do something. And when you make a resolution, you're sober. So you make a resolution sober that you're not going to drink. Now, I believe that when you say that, you could pass the lie detector test. We'd all pass the polygraph. Yet you're drunk at 10 o'clock an hour later. And you see, that's the baffling nature of alcoholism. And that's what they're trying to hammer home here. Because if you have this, the only solution they had, it's not the only solution, but the only solution they had is to find a relationship with God, and God gives you the power so you can say no to drinking. We had somebody the other night, they were celebrating a birthday, and they were thinking about drinking, and then God said, bad idea. And remember, we're here tonight because Bill was going to drink. He was going to go in the Mayflower Hotel in 1935. He'd had a bad weekend, and he was going to go to the bar to listen to music. And as he was crossing the threshold, he thought of maybe he could have a drink. And then if you read it, it's in A Vision for You. He says, fear gripped him and he shivered. That was God. He shivered. God got his attention. And he remembered that when he worked with other alcoholics, he didn't drink. And he turned away from the bar. And he went down to the phones and he called someone to work with an alcoholic. And we're here today. For those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. That's a good idea, isn't it? The program works better sober, by the way. I don't know if it really does. It's easier to work the steps sober. And the problem that they didn't realize is that when we're talking to Alcoholics Anonymous in 2019, we're talking to people who have dual addictions, almost everybody. Very few pure alcoholics anymore. We have very dangerous addictions. And remember, this is alcoholic addiction, The other drugs are other drugs. Alcohol is a drug. The steps will work for all those situations, but you can die quicker. As we've had sober reminders in my own life, and we're celebrating Danny next week. It's very dangerous. It's a very dangerous situation for our society, especially with young people. That's why I always try to reach out to the young people, get them connected, get them in the book. We are assuming, of course, the reader desires to stop. Now here's the deal. Whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose whether he will drink or not. It sounds like a complicated line, but it's one that every alcoholic has to absolutely understand. That if I have lost the power to choose whether I can drink or not, I cannot quit on the basis of knowledge or group therapy or trigger awareness or reading and memorizing the big book. It's only going to come from a power greater than myself and a relationship with it. Now, you can use all those things to get to that power, but you're going to need the power. Many of us felt that we had plenty of character. I know about that, but I've met a lot of characters in AA. There was a tremendous urge to cease forever. Anybody ever have that? Yet we found it impossible. People, is this true for you? And the other thing about reading this book, each statement you should ask yourself, is it true for me? Did I have a tremendous urge to cease forever? Did I find it impossible? This is the baffling feature of alcoholism. Baffling means impossible to understand, perplexing. Nobody understands it. Medical professionals didn't understand it. I didn't understand it when I was 26 years old. It's 3 in the morning. We had to go down and wheel the patients up from the ER. We had to put them in the bed. They've got pancreatitis. They're vomiting. They drank again, and I had them 3 weeks ago, and they swore they would never drink again. And they were such misery, they'd never drink. And they're back 3 weeks later, and I didn't realize that that was me. See, it's baffling. It's baffling to people. I was always amused as a physician when the alcoholic would come in and they're, you know, cirrhosis, things are bad. And they say, everybody tells them they need to quit drinking. And the alcoholic always says, I'm going to quit. And everybody's happy. You know, the staff is all happy. He's going to quit. He's going to quit. Send them to AA. He's going to quit. They don't understand that they don't have the ability to quit. And you can't get mad at an alcoholic who drinks. How can you get mad at somebody who drinks? And the one thing that I've noticed through the years in AA, sometimes we look down on people who, quote, drink again. Hello, that's the disease. We're no better than they are. We're just lucky that today I have a relationship with God and I don't have to drink today. And we have to watch out for spiritual arrogance that somehow we're better than the people who can't stay sober. It's the fatal nature of the disease. And that's why, and we're going to read about Jim. He kept getting drunk, but they kept working with him. Never give up on anybody. Never shut the door. Now, they may give up on you. That's one thing, but never give up on anybody. And always welcome everybody back. And always reach out. Because you never know who you're going to save. This baffling feature, the utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. Now, utter inability to leave it alone on your own power. Can you see that? So then, how shall we help our readers determine to their own satisfaction whether they are one of us? Here's the real question. How can you determine if you're a real alcoholic? If you're reading the book for the first time, remember there's no AA, they have the book. So they're going to tell you how you can determine that. Because they want you to determine that, because on page 43, they're going to tell you you have no defense against the next drink. And then the next chapter is We Agnostics, and they're going to talk about God and how God is the power that removes the problem. The experiment of quitting for a period of time will be helpful, but we think we can render an even greater service to alcoholic sufferers and perhaps to the medical fraternity. So we're going to describe some of the mental states that precede a relapse in the drinking. So they're going to talk about our mind, because where does the disease center? In our minds. It's our thinking. Our thinking causes us to not be able to manage our lives and live without having emotional natures that are out of control, and then our mind tells us it's okay to drink. You get it? Now, everybody who drinks is sober before they drink. So the disease alcoholism occurs when people are sober. That's another thing people get confused. They think all their problems are because they drank. Their problems are because they can't live sober and have a way of life in which they can't keep from drinking. And why? Because they're selfish and self-centered. They're in conflict with everybody and everything. They're full of anger and fear and shame and guilt and remorse. They've harmed a lot of people. And they don't like the way they feel, so they drink. Now, I don't think people go, when they decide to drink, and say, you know, I'm going to go to the liquor store. I'm irritable, restless, and discontent. I'm self-centered. I've made my life unmanageable. I'm full of anger and fear. I've harmed a lot of people. I'm miserable. Give me a drink. Does anybody do that? I don't think so. But that's really what you're saying. And so you're going to have a treatment of the way you live on a different basis so that you don't have to use alcohol as a solution to an unmanageable life. God is always the solution if things aren't going well. You're going to have bad days. Things are going to happen. You're going to get anger and fear, but you're going to learn in the steps how to deal with that. And you're going to learn to seek God all the time in all things. And you never have to drink again. I heard this, I read this thing, and it made sense to me. If you do everything in chapters 4 and 5, and you keep doing them the rest of your life, you won't drink again. And that's at steps 3 through 11. It says the experiment will be helpful, but we think can render another service to the alcoholic readers. So we're going to describe the mental states that precede a relapse. Now, a relapse is a suffered deterioration or slide back into drinking. For obviously, this is the crux, the most important part of the problem. What sort of thinking dominates an alcoholic who repeats time after time the desperate experiment of the first drink? Friends, it is an experiment, isn't it? Because if you take the drink, you're doing an experiment. You think it's going to be different. You must say to yourself, it's okay. And if you took a lie detector test then, you'd pass it. It'd be okay. You'd pass the lie detector test at 9 o'clock saying, I'm never going to drink again. And then if you took the lie detector test right before you drink and you said, it's going to be okay, you would pass it. And if you have that problem, you have no defense against the next drink. Friends who have reasoned with him after a spree which has brought him to the point of divorce or bankruptcy are mystified when he walks directly into a saloon. And this is why we have to be a safe place for alcoholics, because we understand the disease. We have the disease. The people out there, they don't understand us. And we've pissed them off, and we've done a lot of bad things to us. We have to be loving and kind to each other here, because we all have the same disease. We're all shipwrecked from the same boat. Why does he, or what is he thinking? Now, I'm not going to cover all of Jim. I'm just going to read these first two paragraphs, because there's a lot of warnings in here. Our first example is a friend we shall call Jim, and I'm going to finish Jim's story next week. This man has a charming wife and family. He inherited a lucrative automobile agency. He's in good shape, right? Commendable war record, good salesman. Everybody likes him. He is an intelligent man, normal so far as we could see, but you can't see into his mind, right? I bet if we saw Jim's mind, we'd see a lot of crap going on. But he has a nervous disposition. I wonder what they mean by that. He did no drinking until he was 35. In a few years, he became so violent when intoxicated that he had to be committed. On leaving the asylum, an asylum is an institution for mental illness, he came into contact with us. Now, here's a real warning in these next 8 or 9 sentences to all new people and all people who've been here a while. We told him what we knew of alcoholism, so that's what we're supposed to do with the new person. That's what the book is trying to do. It's telling them what they knew about alcoholism. If you meet with a new person, can you tell them what you know about your own alcoholism? Can you describe it to them? And the answer we had found, so you have to have an answer to be able to help somebody. Remember, you cannot give away what you don't have. See that your own house is order. He made a beginning. So Jim's making a beginning. He reassembled his family, and he began to work as a salesman for the business he had lost through drinking. I wonder how he felt about that. Now, here's the warning. All went well for a time, right? He's working. He's got the family back. He's sober. But he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. What are you doing each day to enlarge your spiritual life? Ask yourself. Even if you've been sober 25 years, what are you doing every day? Remember, you have a daily reprieve. What are you doing every day to enlarge your spiritual life? To his consternation, that means his dismay, he kept finding himself drunk. On each of the occasions we worked with him reviewing carefully what had happened, he agreed he was a real alcoholic and in serious condition. He knew he faced another trip to the asylum if he kept on. You think Jim knows he's an alcoholic, right? Jim's been defeated. Moreover, he will lose his family for whom he had deep affection. But I want to tell you something. He loved alcohol more than he loved anything in the world. You see? That was his great love. And then here's the answer. He got drunk again. So next week we're going to pick up and we're going to see his story on what happened to him right before he drank, and then we're going to look at the insanity of the of our mind, our powerlessness, and then we're going to look at the jaywalker. Powerful stuff. Was this helpful? Yep. I mean, anybody's here tonight, if you read this, if you don't really want to get into this book and start working the steps and working with someone, I don't know what can convince you. The other thing is, if anybody has any worry today or fear or something, just realize how grateful you are today that you're sober right now. Think about how grateful we are that we didn't have to drink today. So anyway, I'll end it here and we'll open it up. Thank you.